From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy, happy Thursday. I tell you, this week is just flying by. Can't believe we are one day away from the weekend. An exciting one, to say the least. Everyone is buzzing around this area because the big game takes place in Columbus, Ohio. The Spartans, yeah, they hit the road to take on the Buckeyes, the number two team in the nation. If Michigan State wins that game, it will be very hard not to put them in the college football playoff, at least after this week. We will continue to take your outstanding telephone calls on that very game. What do you think will go down at the Shoe this weekend? Call in 517-355-9527. We will also be diving into the MSU women's basketball team as they topped Georgia last night at the Breslin Center. They now sit at 2-0 on the year. It is the first SEC victory for Susie Merchant while at MSU. How about that? Pretty cool stuff. Also, a new ranking from ESPN has come out, listing the top NBA centers in the league from top to bottom. And guess who's number one? Andre Drummond of the Detroit Pistons. How cool is that, right? Also, folks, not just are we just talking about the big game this week here on Current Sports. We are also chatting about high school football playoff action. How exciting is that, right? As we do still have a few local teams in the running for a state championship, possibly Grand Ledge, Lansing Catholic, Ithaca, and PW. Earlier on in the week, we chatted with, of course, Terry Hesbrook of the Ithaca Yellow Jackets. And today we'll chat with Matt Bird, head coach of the Grand Ledge football team. We'll also have Throwback Thursday for you and so much more. Again, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527.
You know, these teams that are typically the best teams in their division are really good teams. And you all may be taking the week off this week, but I'm not. And a lot of people take a lot of things for granted, and I get asked questions like, well, how important is it for the young guys to get to play this week? Well, how in the hell do you know they're going to get to play? I mean, what makes you think that you can just assume that they're going to get to play? Because you're assuming that the other team is not very good. They do have a Division I quarterback. He plays like a Division I quarterback, and they're very, very productive on offense, and they do a great job of executing what they do. And if we don't play good against them, you all don't remember the Georgia Southern game, do you? I don't think we had a guy on that field that didn't play in the NFL, and about four or five of them were first-round draft picks. And I think that team won a national championship, but I'm not sure. And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them. Could not stop them. Could not stop them. Because we couldn't get a look in practice. We didn't practice it right. All right, and everybody said the same thing in that game. Y'all took a week off. All right, this wasn't important. All right, so it's not important to anybody else. It's got to be important to the players, and it's got to be important to us. You know, everybody gets all excited about the beginning of the season. You know, you get excited about getting married, all right? But after you're married for a while, you know, you got to have a process to make it work, all right? And no matter what happens, we need to have a process to make it work in every game that we play. Every game that we play. Can't assume anything. I don't even know what you asked me, but I just wanted to say that. Did anybody see that game? You saw that game? Yeah. I think we'd given up like 300 yards rushing the whole season in 10 games. That's like 30 yards a game. And all anybody wanted to talk about was how dominant the front was and how nobody could run against us. They got 300 yards rushing in one game. You don't remember that. I don't know, maybe you weren't around then. I don't know, maybe you're not old enough. Ha ha ha! You sure you want to ask?
I'm good.
I tell you what, how epic have the rants of Alabama head football coach Nick Saban been this year? Oh my goodness, that tickled me. Of course, Nick, he held his press conference this week, of course, giving a synopsis of what to expect as the Crimson Tide, they will actually play Charleston Southern this weekend, a game in which, of course, the Crimson Tide are highly favored. Many people are predicting that Alabama will completely roll over Charleston Southern. Many people even calling it a week off for Bama. Nick Saban does not think that, as you just heard. He went off. I mean, he just completely just lost it yesterday. And he's had another rant that everyone's been talking about, too, earlier this season. But the Alabama coach, he went into a bit of a tirade during Wednesday's presser. Of course, again, they play in an FCS school in Charleston Southern on Saturday before they play Auburn for the final game of the regular season. That's going to be a big game. Saban didn't want anyone in the room looking ahead and past Charleston Southern and to, of course, Auburn. And, you know, he just went on this rant about, hey, do you remember the 2011 game against Georgia Southern? And he just went off, you know. And I love Nick Saban. Now, a lot of people out there, especially those who of course are fans of Michigan State, they have a kind of a distaste for Saban, seeing as though how he left the green and white, and seeing as though he's looking at his entire path to how he ended up at Alabama. There are a lot of people that aren't big Nick Saban fans, but I like Nick Saban because I respect him. I respect him a lot because he is a winner. He's so competitive, so competitive. And he's just the ideal coach that you want if you're trying to get W's. He's uber competitive and he just takes it week by week and he lets it be known to his team that you cannot overlook anybody, as well as most coaches are. I mean, it's very rare when you walk into a press conference and a coach is standing there on the podium that a coach is going to say, yeah, this should be an easy game for us. You will not hear a coach say that, point blank, period. And if you do hear a coach say that, I mean, it's a little bit disrespectful. So you just rarely see that. And Nick Saban is a guy who certainly is not going to do that on a week-to-week basis. But at the same time, you know, Nick Saban has been known to just speak his mind as well. He does keep it real. And he just kept it real. He kept it real yesterday at that press conference. And, you know, he kind of attacked the media and said, hey, you guys may be, you know, calling this one as an easy game. It's already in the bag for Bama to win, but it's not a week off for me. And yeah, he had I think the quote of that rant has to be, and they ran through our blanks like blank through a tin horn. And as you just started, we had to censor that with a few beeps. As we had to play that for you. But it was just an epic rant. And I like Saban because, again, he's a guy who is going to tell it like it is, but also keep it in perspective. And he was just keeping it in perspective. We're not looking past Auburn. We have a job to do this Saturday because there was a time back in 2011 in which Bama did beat Georgia Southern 45-21 in the game that Saban is referencing to, but they ran 39 times for over 300 yards. So basically, no game is a gimme. That's the message that Saban wanted to convey in his press conference, and he did it with some colorful language. So I think we do have the bite of his rant earlier that we want to play for you, because this one is even better. Listen to this one if you haven't heard.
It's not going to be for you. The fans, yes. Because if it was up to you, we're 6 foot under already. We're dead and buried and gone. Gone. So if that was the case, I mean, we'd have to get some respirators out or something down there, all right, to put life back in people.
How great is that one, right? Oh, my goodness. Again, that was after they beat Georgia 38-10 amid questions of Alabama's place in the college football world. He delivered a passionate response to a question about focus. Where is the team's focus? And a reporter asked about keeping players dialed in with so much attention to the program, and he just kept it real. I mean, many of you media had is gone. Barry, gone. That was probably – that's my favorite rant out of the two. But Nick Saban, he's not afraid to just pop off and speak his mind during a press conference. And you know what? There was a moment during Coach D'Antonio's presser this week, Isaac, in which I thought D'Antonio was on that edge of basically just kind of just flipping out. But he kept his cool. Of course, he was asked a question. We played that earlier on Tuesday's show about how Lynn Henning, sports writer, he asked Coach D'Antonio about how – fans in Michigan who follow the college football world closely, how fans in Michigan are so conditioned to think Michigan, Ohio State. And then D'Antonio cuts Lynn off and says, no, not really. And Lynn laughs it off because it becomes real awkward when Coach D says that. And Lynn laughs it off. But then, Coach, you can see – it's so funny. And we're playing it actually tonight on Current Sports TV if you want to check it out. But you can see Coach D's face when it's said, when Lynn tries to laugh it off, and he just keeps this stone cold, just do not mess with me type of a face. And he throws his hands up like, really? You asked me that? Of all questions, you asked me that on the heels of this game. So I really thought that D'Antonio was going to go on a rant after that, but he kept his cool. It's very rare where you see Coach D kind of lose his cool – really, the only press conference that really stands out in my mind of Coach D really popping off was when I think it was my senior year of college, and I was working with I think I was an intern at Channel 6 at the time working the MSU football game, and D'Antonio had his famous next question press conference, and that was very awkward. But that's really the only time where I seen D'Antonio kind of lose it. But I like Nick Saban's rants; they're very colorful and entertaining.
Well, what throws me off about Nick Saban's rants, I suppose, is these are after wins. These aren't after losses. Alabama, of course, lost to Ole Miss earlier this year, and you know what? We didn't hear too much about it. But the first rant came after – which game was that? The gone? Was that after Ole Miss? No, that was after Georgia.
Yeah,
after
it was after
beating Georgia.
Right.
It comes after a win that Nick Saban says that. This is off the back of a – 31-6 stomping of number 17 Mississippi State. And Nick Saban is still aggravated. He's still annoyed. So
there's a method to his madness, though. I mean, the greats of the game, even if they win, it's still not good enough. That's what makes Tom Izzo so great. I mean, it's very rare where we cover an MSU men's basketball game and Michigan State may blow out the opposition, but it's very rare where Tom Izzo comes in and starts to press her like, oh, we played fantastic. We played great. It is mostly 90% negative during every Tom Izzo press conference.
Oh, yeah, but what scares me is the fact that imagine that locker room after a loss. After that loss to Ole Miss, Nick Saban, boy, I don't know if we'd have enough beat button to last the segment, but no, Nick Saban... one of my favorite ranters, even if not one of my favorite coaches.
Yeah, without a doubt, he is great. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, as you just heard, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Of course, it is the big week, folks. Spartans and Buckeyes. Of course, we have been highlighting that matchup throughout the week here on WKAR's Current Sports, and we continue that on today's show, on Thursday's edition. Again, if you want to call in, give your thoughts on the big game. Again, Saturday, 3:30 p.m., Spartans, Buckeyes, Spartans on the road in the Shoe. A lot of implications for this game. We will continue to take your thoughts and predictions. Call in, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. 9527. And before we move on here, I want to get to a caller who's just called in on line one. One of our favorite callers is on the line. My man, Apachu. How you doing, Apachu? Welcome to the show.
All right, man. All right. Where do you rank me in the Final Four, brother?
Right now in the
playoffs.
As far as the college football playoff is concerned right now.
No. Anyway, you missed that one. You missed that
one. I definitely missed that one.
I was fooling with you. Rank me as a caller, man, the Final Four.
Oh, I got to say, you're numero uno, Apache. Oh, come on, brother.
Okay.
You don't even have to ask that question.
You say that to everybody. Hey, here's my comment.
What's up?
Okay, I thought the committee was seriously looking at game schedules, the level of competition that was being chosen on the one hand, and they were penalizing teams for not having that competitive schedule. And here you got Alabama playing a team like this. And wasn't it a couple years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, we were talking about Alabama bowing out in a home-and-home series with MSU?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did. I remember having that discussion here on the show, yeah.
Yeah, I think they saw the writing on the wall, you know, that Michigan State was here to stay and they were going to be a powerful program to deal with, and they can affect your outcome for the year. He's at the point where he's got to win every year. I mean, here he is, like you said, the best program in the country, and he got to win every year. And anyway, so I heard Jim Rome this morning talking about how Alabama was having trouble scheduling good ball teams to play against because they're a powerful program. And then I thought about how they bowed out of that program with MSU, and MSU was upset. So that I don't totally agree with that.
Mm-hmm. But you know what's interesting, though, Pachu? I was watching last night on ESPN. They had like a college football show breaking down, you know, the respective teams in the latest edition of the college football playoff poll. But it really took me by surprise that when you really break down the top 25 teams right now in the nation, Alabama has the toughest schedule and has the most quality wins out of any other team in the nation. They've beaten a ranked Wisconsin team. They've beaten a ranked Georgia team, a ranked Texas A&M team, a ranked LSU team, and a ranked Mississippi State team. So no other team has that.
I don't argue with that, but I still feel like they got no business playing a team at this level. I don't think they need to do that. I think it was preconceived already that, you know, last year was it they had three teams from the SEC in the Final Four to begin with, and this year you got a one-loss team before all this stuff started developing. Alabama in the top four. You know, sometimes I feel like it's the personality of the Ohio State coach and the history, and also the Alabama coach, and reason why they get such an edge over other teams. And, you know, you guys talk about disrespect, and that's true. It's true. You just got to beat up everybody in sight to get your respect, and maybe you'll get some of that preferential treatment as well. I really do think they have an edge over other teams for, in my opinion, political reasons. You know, it's not a big deal. You got to win. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go undefeated, then, you know, everybody shuts their mouths. You got to win, period. But I want to ask you something, too. If... Being a Wolverine fan, if you guys lose to Ohio State and we beat Penn State and Ohio State and Iowa, don't you think that it's a very good chance Michigan would be in the Final Four because of the 25 top-rated teams? They got six from the Big Ten, which means that the Big Ten has the best conference in the country because the next closest number is four teams from other conferences. Don't you think that makes them look pretty powerful, pretty strong, you know?
There's no doubt about it. If Michigan wins out and they do end up, you know, and if, let's say Ohio State does beat Michigan State this Saturday and Michigan ends up knocking off what we perceive to be, you know, during that November 28th matchup, if that happens, an undefeated, a college football playoff team in the Buckeyes. If Michigan does beat the Buckeyes and possibly plays in that Big Ten championship game against Iowa, oh, certainly. I think you have to put Michigan in the playoff, without a doubt, Apache.
And then here again, you got a personality, okay, that college football loves, you know, Jim Harbaugh, and you got a storyline that they would love. And one of the biggest, most beautiful storylines is that you got a quarterback who was told at Iowa, you know, you're not going to be top-notch quarterback. You're not our number one quarterback. So if you want to go elsewhere, we support that. And he did, and they could end up in a championship game against each other. That's a beautiful storyline, and they love storylines, you know.
But the question of numbers now, am I right about this, Isaac? Because Ohio State, if that does happen, though, I mean, Ohio State would only have one loss on the year if Michigan does beat Ohio State. If Ohio State beats Michigan State, then they go and play Michigan, and they lose in that game. Ohio State still plays in that Big Ten championship game, though, right?
Well, I think it would be Michigan. Because Michigan would have the tiebreaker over Ohio State. I looked this up a few weeks ago. The number one tiebreaker for like conference records is the head-to-head matchup. Number two then goes to overall record. But
So number one is the head-to-head. So if they do win, they do get it, but despite the fact that they would have two losses on the year.
Yes, since one is non-conference.
Gotcha. Okay, so I guess they will play in that Big Ten championship game against an Iowa team. If they beat Iowa, I think you got to throw them in there.
You got to seriously consider them, and I just can't believe that. You got six teams in that final 25, and you're obviously the most powerful conference that you got to be heavily considered anyway. Sorry, man. I got to go against you this week, man, because I want to get to that Iowa game. So
I knew that was coming. You are probably the biggest Ohio State fan this
Today
weekend.
I am. This weekend I am, yeah. Unfortunately, man, otherwise I want you guys to win, you know.
Right. No, but I hear you. That's like that Jake Butt tweet I read on the air. You know, Jake Butt tweeted out, hey, I'm the biggest Ohio State fan this upcoming weekend. I'm pretty sure because it gives you guys a chance still at clinging on to a playoff. So, hey, I hear you. I hear you, brother. I hear you, Pachu.
Hey, but wouldn't you be pushing for Ohio State when we play them?
Yeah.
Regardless of your outcome?
Without a doubt. That's how it is. That's how the cookie
Even
crumbles.
Even Steven, man. Even Steven.
I dig that.
Have a good weekend, man.
Hey, Apache, thanks a lot for your call. Always a good one. But, I didn't know that. So when breaking it down, even though, you know, Ohio State would only have one loss in a year, the head-to-head matchup just kind of trumps that. And Michigan would possibly, you know, they would get that preview into playing in that Big Ten championship game. I had no idea.
Thank you for
that.
Yeah, so when the two teams are tied or three teams are tied, it goes to the tiebreaker first. Then the records of those three teams, if there are, will be compared against each other. And then the records of the three teams within the division will be compared. So it's this whole long process. There's actually seven steps to it, in case it wasn't that far.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy stuff. Now, and going back to Apache's point about Bama, I mean, I really do believe that Bama right now deserves where they are in the college football playoff when it comes to their rankings. Because again, I plan team. They're the only team right now that are ranked in that top 25 that has played against that amount of ranked opponents. Again, Wisconsin, Ole Miss, in which they lost, Georgia, Texas A&M, LSU, and Mississippi State. They've only lost against Ole Miss, but they've played arguably the toughest schedule out of any other team in the entire country, and they've held their own. So I do think that they deserve – I don't think it's politics when we're talking about Bama here. I think they deserve a spot in the playoff right now.
Well, in that very first week, I was slightly incensed that they got the nod at the number four spot back in week 10 because I thought it was too early to start facing teams off of quality losses when other teams in major conferences were still undefeated. However, I think that time's done. I think it's time to say that Alabama, you know, that loss to Ole Miss, it is not a quality loss even, but they've sure made up for it. Like you said, they've had the hardest strength of schedule of any team so far. I think that they beat out teams like Notre Dame. I think they beat out teams like Baylor, TCU, like MSU comprehensively based on the strength of schedule and how impressive they've been in some of those wins.
They have. Right,
look
especially
at the win against LSU.
The LSU win, exactly.
More than anything else, shutting down the best running back in the country, holding him for 31 yards. Now, this Alabama team's for real. You know, growing up a Tiger fan, I was never a fan or a proponent of anything Alabama. But the one thing I always did respect about that program and Nick Saban is they're legitimate. I
can tell certainly.
Every single time they get a slot, they deserve it because they've just built up that program. They've got the best athletes, and look what they do in the NFL as well.
And then they follow that LSU win up with a 31-6 romping of Dak Prescott. I mean, they've corralled him the entire game. So I really think it's impressive what Nick has been able to do, especially coming into a year in which there were question marks. There were question marks about this Alabama team, whether or not they would have enough offensive weapons to help out that outstanding defense. And they have backed it up and gotten better, I believe, week after week after week. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You know what? Before we hit this first break, we got to hit you with our current sports quick hit headliners for this Thursday, November 19th. All right, folks, we start our headliners with CMU. Cooper Rush threw for 337 yards, and the defense tightened the screws in the second half as CMU defeated Kent State 27-14 in a Mid-American Conference game at Windy Dick Stadium. The win lifted CMU to a 6-5 overall record, 5-2 in the MAC, and made the Chips bowl eligible for the fourth consecutive season and the eighth time in the last 10 years. How good has Cooper Rush been, right? All right, Michigan State's women's basketball team. They had a 30-9 lead early in the first quarter, but Georgia closed the half on a 14-3 run to make it 33-23. The Spartans went scoreless for 7-plus minutes during the stretch. Michigan State opened the second half on a 12-4 run to pull ahead 45-27, and Georgia was held scoreless for the first 3-plus minutes in the fourth quarter. Brandi Agee added 14 points for Michigan State, and Morgan Green had a career best, 11 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. Torrey Jankowska with another set of 20 buckets as well. Oakland University was the last NCAA Division I team to begin its season, and its top returning player, Khalil Felder, took a bit longer to get into the flow. Felder didn't score in the first 13 minutes of Wednesday night's home opener as the Oakland Grizzlies took on Eastern Michigan, with the Golden Grizzlies falling behind 9 points. But once Felder found the bottom of the net, there was no stopping him. He closed the first half with 15 points, including 10 for 10 from the charity stripe. The Grizz stormed back into the game and carried that momentum toward a 10-point win over the Eagles. The Detroit Red Wings, they took it down to the wire last night facing Justin Abdelkader, Alexander Ovechkin, and the Washington Capitals at the Joe. The scoring got started early with the Wings' high-flying youngster, Dylan Larkin, scoring his sixth goal of the season. That being the only goal for the Wings, the Caps ended up winning with a score of 2-1, scoring a goal with just 45 seconds into overtime. Andre Drummond is posting record numbers through the Detroit Pistons' first 11 games, and the national media can't help but notice. ESPN's Bradford Doolittle, who is an insider, has been ranking players from by positional groupings, and this week he dissected the center position. And guess who Doolittle thinks is the league's best big man? That's right, Detroit's own Andre Drummond. President Barack Obama came out and compared himself to none other than Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, President Obama claimed that he has a lot of similar qualities as Rodgers. Obama said that he, quote, likes Aaron Rodgers in the pocket and with defenders trying to knock him down. Obama also believes that he does not get flustered in what is around him exactly like Rodgers. All right, and last but certainly not least, sad news here. Former NCAA, CFL, and NFL Pro Bowl quarterback Doug Flutie had a terrible loss on Wednesday. His father, Dick, passed away at a hospital in Florida of a heart attack. And then a half hour later, his mother passed away, also suffering a heart attack. Flutie was quoted in saying, quote, "They say you can die of a broken heart, and I believe it. Condolences are sent to the entire Flutie family." Wow. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll be chatting with Matt Bird, head coach of the Grand Ledge football team. Bird captured his first regional title as a coach last week, and they now move on to play Romeo tomorrow night. You don't want to miss that chat and so much more. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Before moving forward here, I have to remind you all that, hey, it is Thursday, and each and every Thursday night on WKAR-TV at 10:30, Current Sports TV airs. That's right, folks. You do not want to miss tonight's show, as I got a chance to sit down with a coach of a team that has been really turning a lot of heads, especially this season, seeing as though they won the Division II boys high school varsity soccer state championship. That's I'm talking about the Mason varsity boys soccer team, folks. Unbelievable stuff. The entire team actually came out to last night's taping. It was fantastic getting a chance to chat with them about their run and that incredible, incredible game in the state championship in which they played a Grand Rapids team that it was pretty good. Pretty good Grand Rapids team that had a 2-1 lead with, what, like 2 minutes left in the game. And then with 36 seconds left, or 38 seconds left in regulation, excuse me, Kristen Jordan delivered a goal to tie things up. It goes to overtime and penalty kicks, and Mason pulls out the dub. So I invited the whole team out. They came along with their families and friends. It was a packed house last night, and I chatted with the head coach of that team, Nick Binder, who actually was on that roster back in 1997. That's the last time the Mason boys soccer team won a state championship, and Nick was a part of that team, and now he delivers their a state championship as a coach. Unbelievable ride, an unbelievable story that you do not want to miss. Again, that is tonight at 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV. And speaking of high school sports, of course, this is a big week for four of our local teams, seeing as though they still have their eyes on the prize and are still competing for a chance at hoisting their very own state championship trophy. And those teams that I'm talking about, of course, are Lansing Catholic, Ithaca, PW, and Grand Ledge. Lansing Catholic will take on Grand Rapids West Catholic this week. Ithaca takes on Traverse City, St. Francis. We had Terry Hesbrook on the show 2 days ago. Also, Detroit Loyola will take on PW. And, of course, Grand Ledge, they will face Romeo tomorrow to keep their state championship hopes alive. And right now on the line we have the head coach of the Grand Ledge football team, Matt Bird. Bird captured his first regional title as a coach last week as the Comets, they topped Rockford. Again, they now move on to play Romeo tomorrow night. Matt, thanks so much for taking some time out to join us here on the show.
Thanks, Al. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. It's always a great time having you on, Matt. Now, you know, pretty cool stuff here because during your 10-year coaching tenure at GL, Rockford had eliminated you guys two times. How sweet was that to get that victory last week, Matt?
Oh, it was big. We had mentioned as a coaching staff, it was good to get that monkey off our back. Coach Munger is a great coach, has done a great job over there, built a heck of a program, and we know we're going to have to go against those Westside teams when we try to make a run, and we were just very fortunate to have things turn out the way they did.
And you know what, Matt? It was an incredible game, and I had to actually do a double take as I was following it on my Twitter page because you guys were down, and then in the fourth quarter, you come back in that game and score 33 points to get the dub. Matt, can you kind of take us through that quarter and what led to that offensive explosion? What occurred in that quarter?
Well, a lot of it was the kids allowing adjustments to be made, and we have a lot of senior leadership on this group that's had some big game experience, not only with football, but then also in basketball and the success that we've had with baseball. And so those kids, there was no panic that sent in. We really felt that we had a good game plan, but it was mistakes that we were making, not necessarily things that we were allowing to have happen. And so the kids just kind of regrouped, and we were able to get some turnovers, and special teams really changed it. We were able to pin them down from a kickoff standpoint, and things started to go in our favor, and the kids just did a great job.
And you know what? Looking at the score and to start that fourth, I mean, you're talking about a 16-6 lead. Well, Matt, what was the demeanor like on the sidelines? And what did you preach to your team to make sure that they were still focused in the moment and still had a chance of pulling out a win?
Well, we have this is a very unique group, and we've been very intentional about building trust and building family and building that camaraderie and how tough those things can be. And so at halftime, we talked about, hey, this is something where we're going to have to really set aside portions of ourselves and the worries that we have individually and come together as a group even harder than we ever have before. And so put the fears aside. Don't listen to that little voice in your head that's telling that you can't do something. Get it in your head that we can do something and we will do something and execute. And it was just a lot of those revisiting those same things. And, you know, the kids did a phenomenal job.
Was that, Matt, for you, when looking at how this year has gone, because looking at your schedule, I mean, you guys have really had an incredible stretch. Again, you guys are undefeated, had multiple wins in which you've won by double digits. Was this the biggest test of adversity, playing Rockford in that moment, possibly the season ending and then storming back? Was that the biggest test of adversity that you guys have faced all year?
Oh, I think so. You know, that was big for us. And we had another situation, too, with East Lansing, where we turned the ball over 7 times in one game. And I told one of our coaches after the game, you can coach a long time and never have that happen where you turn the ball over 7 times and actually come away as a winner. So that was one. Early on in the season, the Sexton game, Sexton had put us up against the wall early with a 21-point lead, and our kids were able to rally back. And so, but this one being in the playoffs with everything that was going on, this was big, was a real big one for us.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Matt Bird, who is the head coach of the Grand Ledge football team. They are still in state championship running. They now move on to play Romeo tomorrow night. Now, Matt, looking at last season, 4 wins for you all last year, and now you stand undefeated. Did you foresee this kind of success at all this year? When you looked at this team before the season started, I mean, What made you believe that this team could really be special this season?
It was them and the way they interacted with each other, the way they committed themselves to things, the history they've had. We're a unique community in that our youth program is as strong as it is, and it's valued out here with such intensity that these kids are able to build a camaraderie from now we start flag football in kindergarten, and then they get in fourth grade, they transition to tackle. And so you see these groups come up, and the camaraderie they have, the success that they have, their ability to handle things not only on the athletic field but in the classroom, it's just been tremendous to watch. And just as a coach, you want to just help model that and help kind of morph things into place, but also you don't want to stand in the way.
Matt, can you talk about the pressure during this time of the year? Again, you guys are undefeated right now, and even throughout the regular season, I mean, to stay undefeated from week to week to week, how much pressure do you feel as a coach, and how do you keep that in perspective for your players?
Well, to be honest, a lot of prayer. It's a situation that you hope that you know, God can give you the strength to be humble and be in the moment. And you know, we do that. I do that a lot. But then from the kid's standpoint, we've never talked about record. And I know that's cliche-ish, but we haven't. It's never been about the record. It's the expectation of that week and how can we build on each day and get better and better and better. And so from that, this has been the result, which has been an absolute blessing to be a part of.
Yeah, it certainly has, and it's quite a ride that you all are on. And actually, you know, looking at history here, Matt, the last time you all beat Brighton and Rockford, you went to the state championship game in the year 2000 for that school. What does that history allude to today, if anything, or are we just grasping at straws here?
I was fortunate enough to be a part of that group. I was a young coach. I was an offensive coordinator on Coach O'Keefe's team in 2000. He brought me over in 99. And to have that experience, to kind of know what to expect, to know how much of a grind it is. I mean, a lot of times this level of the year is not so much the talent. I mean, that's huge, but it's also the intestinal fortitude to get you through because it's a grind. We've been going since, you know, August 10th, and it's covered an entire marking period for us in the classroom. Kids will be taking their exams next week. So it is a grind, and it is, you know, history is one thing, but, you know, we're just, it's more of the experience and understanding and knowing that it can be done. has been really nice. The other special thing is a lot of those guys that were on that team have contacted these kids and talked with them about how much trust at this standpoint is bigger than anything else.
Wow, so players from the past have reached out to the team. Whose idea was that? Was that your idea, Matt?
Actually, no. The guys from the 2000 team did it on their own. We try to stay in contact with our former players as much as we can. We have a saying that we tell our kids each year. We talk about family, and we say that sons will get older and they'll leave the house, but you never leave the family. And so we really try to promote that as much as possible with communication with our groups. And that 2000 team, a lot of those guys have just naturally sat back and watched. They haven't come and necessarily spoke to the kids, but they've sent me text messages and notes through emails and things that they've asked to have read to the group. And it's been a very unique experience.
I absolutely love that. Fantastic. It truly is a family there at Grand Ledge. Now, you know what, Matt? When I was in high school, my high school football team at Annapolis High School in Dearborn Heights, Michigan, we never came close to even sniffing a state championship in the world of football. I can only imagine what the buzz is like at school. I mean, you being a teacher, I mean, when you're walking, through the hallways and talking to other members of the administration and talking to the other students who are a part of the student body there at Grand Ledge, I mean, what is the buzz like right now at school?
It's been a really positive energy. Probably the nice thing is that we are moving towards the end of the trimester, and so there's a lot of focus on exams, so there is a sense of normalcy to it as well. So that's also an advantage. But the kids go, and Michigan State was Coach D'Antonio was nice enough to allow us to use the indoor building last night because of weather and things, and so we were able to get out there, and then we came back in, and our moms had and some of the kids, the students had decorated the locker room and the walking into the locker room, different letters of encouragement, and the buzz is great. The banks have got signs up, and it's really, really special, and it's a testament to the kids and the community.
Matt, has this team already surpassed your own expectations?
That's a great question, because they're the expectations that they've really placed on themselves. But once again, it's that week-to-week thing. That's where I catch myself sometimes just sitting back and watching and almost in awe of the way they interact with themselves, the way they see things on their own. And they've made a lot of adjustments on the field on their own because of things that they've seen and the experiences that they've had. So this is these are their expectations. As a coach, you just try to keep your worry in place and kind of replace your anxiety with the preparation. But it's just such a unique experience to be a part of.
Matt Bird, head football coach for the Grand Ledge Commons. Before we get you out of here, Matt, what do you know about Romeo? What kind of team are they, and what sort of a game can we expect tomorrow night?
Oh, they are a darn good football team that is similar to us in the sense that they are a group that's been together a long time. They are very united as a group. The community's really rallied behind them. They got a unique experience where they actually have two head coaches. They have co-coaches that were former players at Romeo. So it is, they've got good athletes. They have an offense that will hold on to the football. They're similar to Rockford in that sense with what they do. Defensively, they're a small, aggressive group that creates a whole lot of havoc for you and has you change, that can get you out of your comfort zone. So Romeo, from a special team standpoint, defensive standpoint, offensive standpoint, they're a solid team, as you would expect at this point in the season.
Matt, what's the most nerve-wracking part about this time of the year for you as a coach?
The waiting. The waiting is a nerve-wracking thing. The sense of normalcy that you can get. You've got obligations to the MHSAA that you have to do. You have different obligations throughout the town and in the building that you have to do. So from that standpoint, it's trying to keep as much normalcy as possible. And that's where that comes through, because the 15- to 18-year-old kids, I worry about it, but they don't know any different. That's their first experience, and so I'm the one that worries more than they do.
Well, I tell you what, on behalf of all of us here at WKAR's Current Sports, we wish you all the luck in the world, Matt, as you get, again, you guys keep your state championship dreams alive, taking on Romeo tomorrow night. Again, Matt, good luck, and thanks for your time this afternoon, my man.
Thanks so much, Al. I really appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, my man. We'll definitely be in touch. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on this edition of Current Sports. Still plenty of time left, 15 minutes left. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll talk about Andre Drummond being ranked as the NBA's best center, the MSU women's basketball team topping Georgia, and an interesting throwback Thursday for you. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports. Hats off to the MSU women's basketball team last night at the Breslin Center. They beat Georgia 66-45. And Tori Jankowska, man, is she fun to watch or what? Oh my goodness. She made 4 3-pointers, finished with 20 points. Oh, and I tell you what, another emerging player who I really love her game. I mean, watching her out there and how she just takes command of the offense and her court vision. Oh, I chatted with her this past weekend as the MSU women's basketball team opened the season up against Western Michigan on Sunday. And Morgan Green, oh, if you haven't seen her play yet, she has been she's fun to watch as well. I mean, she had a career best 11 points, 10 rebounds, and 7 assists last night. I mean, she just balls out, and she's such a sweetheart. You know, interviewing her after that Western Michigan game, she's so humble, and she's all about making sure that her teammates get involved and that they get theirs before she gets hers. And she, in the fast break, I mean, her court vision is just probably the best on the team, the best on the team. And that's saying a lot when you have players like Tori Jankowska, Ariel Powers, who we have yet to see play in the regular season. They're really making sure that she is A-OK before she goes back on the court. She is the star of that team. Let's just keep it real. Ariel Powers is a scoring juggernaut, but they're making sure that she's going to be 100% healthy before she gets back on the court. But right now, you know, the Spartans aren't missing a beat without her. Tori Jankowska, Morgan Green, Brandy Agee, 14 points for her. Bottom line, the team is healthy right now. MSU women's basketball is healthy, and they have a deep roster. They have a lot of players they can bring in and provide good, solid minutes that really give the starters some good time to rest. And Jasmine Hines, we all know about how the last 2 years she has been injured. It's great to see her back on the court. She had 6 points last night. But right now, this is a fun team to watch. And I think that especially when Ariel Powers gets back, and just, can you just imagine? I mean, Tori Jankowska, Ariel Powers, Morgan Green, you got Brandy Agee playing spectacular, Jasmine Hines. How about Akaya Taylor? She returns as a Spartan as well. This team is so deep. And I really think that when March comes a calling, this team can make a solid run in the tourney. If they play up to expectations, if they play up to their potential, I think they will strongly compete for a Big Ten championship. And you know, going back to Media Day, when I was at Media Day and talking with Susie about the squad, of course, right now the cream of the crop that everyone's raving about in the Big Ten is Maryland. They actually beat Michigan State last year in the Big Ten tournament, and that's something that Susie Merchant and the team hasn't forgot. But Maryland is that team. Of course, Maryland went all the way to the Final Four last year. That's the team that Michigan State is going to be looking at this year to knock off, point blank, period. And I think they do have the talent to do so. But this is a fun team to watch. Isaac, have you ever seen Ariel Powers play?
Only on snippets of TV and different highlights I've seen, but she's sure been impressive. Of course, we covered some of her this summer, Al, when she was playing for the Team USA, I believe. And she was absolutely tearing it up there. So no surprise to see really Michigan State picking up right back where they were last year. Tori Jankowska, I remember covering her, not in person, but just discussing her game last year. And she looks to be picking off right where she left off. So season looks good for MSU, most definitely.
Yeah, it certainly does. And folks, speaking of Maryland, again, if you need a game to circle on your calendar, it will be January 23rd. That's when Michigan State will play Maryland for the, I believe, the first and only time this season. That will be on the road at College Park. So that's going to be a fun matchup. So, again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Briefly here, have to acknowledge Andre Drummond, who has been a man amongst boys so far this season in the NBA. ESPN's Bradford Doolittle, who is an ESPN insider, he has been ranking players by positional groupings in the NBA. And Doolittle's rankings, they are based on the combination of on-court performance and advanced statistics. And right now, he has Andre Drummond listed as the NBA's top center in the league. And it's really hard to argue with that notion, seeing as though Drummond is averaging 19.1 points, 18.9 rebounds, and has had double-doubles in each of the Pistons' 11 games this season. He is second among power forwards and centers in WARP, which is wins above replacement player, trailing only Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans, and is really the driving force behind the Pistons' 6-5 start. If it wasn't for and hasn't been for Andre Drummond's play down low, his consistency on the boards providing Detroit with those second chance opportunities, right now I don't believe that the Pistons would be 6-5 so far, and I don't think they would have knocked off the Eastern Conference's cream of the crop in the Cleveland Cavaliers this past weekend. Really hard to argue with this one, though. I think Mr. Doolittle nailed this one right on the head.
Yeah, it's tough to argue whenever somebody's putting up those statistics, 19.1 points per game, 18.9 rebounds per game. Like you said, all of those double-doubles, so many of them, 20 and 20 games as well. We saw Andre Drummond average through the first five games of the season a 20-20 game. That's unparalleled since 1990s. However, I think you could also make a debate for DeMarcus Cousins. He's certainly an honorable mention for that spot.
We had a bad night last night. I talked about the Kings and their start to the year. Nine of the first 11 games have been at home. I really said that this road trip is going to really test his team. He struggled last night.
He did, but at the same time, struggled means 20. Struggled is not as bad for Andre DeMarcus Cousins, yeah, than it is for other players. And on the season, you know, he's still averaging 27.5 points per game, 11 rebounds. DeMarcus Cousins, still a man amongst boys.
Yeah, he certainly is. All right, folks, 5 minutes left. It's time for Throwback Thursday. And before we dive into the specific moments, there is one moment that I want to play here on the show because this occurred back in 2004. And how can you forget it?
Good balance scoring. Artest with 24. O'Neal had 20. Crozier 15, Tinsley 13, and Jackson with 12. All five starters in double figures. The Pacers have played a very intelligent game tonight. Then Wallace is fouled, and Wallace did. Oh, Wallace right at our chest. This has potential to be serious if they don't get between. Wallace upset. Players trying to hold each other off. Steven Jackson and Rasheed Wallace trying to be peacemakers. Now Jackson yelling. Wallace still going. You need the coaches in there to get him away. Jackson challenging Derek Coleman. Somebody should just get Jackson out of there. That's what causes the problem. Rasheed Wallace did an excellent job trying to keep everybody away and trying to keep the peace. But it started after Artest with a hard foul on Wallace after he got behind him. And then Ben Wallace came over with the shove. An ugly way for this one to wind down. Totally uncalled for. I want to see the foul again because it appeared Wallace was past him and Artest shoved him. And that's what Wallace took exception to, but you still can't react that way. You've got to let it go. That's not that hard of a foul. It's not a normal foul, but not that hard. And Ben Wallace can't react that way. Wallace is still charged up. Now, Wallace, I would assume, has been ejected. The way Steven Jackson's carrying on, they should eject him as well. They need to somehow find a way to get this game over with as quickly as possible. The problem is, if Wallace is ejected, I'm not sure, he'd have to walk past the Pacer bench to go. Now Artest has jumped over the scorer's table and is trying to get down to the bench. Artest is in the stands. Oh, this is awful. Fans are getting involved. Steven Jackson's in the fans. Rasheed Wallace going into the stands. The security trying to somehow restore order. Fans and players are going at it, and the players trying to help each other out. This is a disgrace. All the players now, they're jumping in there to try and get the other players out because the fans have come involved. Oh, what a sad scene here at the Palace. And now another fight's breaking out in front of the Pistons bench. It's a fan on the court. This is very, very dangerous. Fans are throwing cups with liquid in them now onto the court. Ron Artest has a look in his eye that's very scary right now. You wonder if the official's going to let this game continue. Now they're throwing bottles out onto the floor. They're trying to get the Pacers to go back to the locker room. What was maybe you could call a hard foul at best has turned into just an ugly, ugly scene. Chuck Person, the officials, I think they're going to call this game off, and that should be the outcome is definitely decided. You have these ridiculous fans trying to go at the players and now throwing. Somebody could really get hurt. This is a bad showing from the Pistons fans here. Just firing bottles from the stands. The Pacers have all gone back into the locker room, and they're getting thrown a lot of debris, and they're still not all the way through. And for some reason, one of the Pacers, they hold Austin Crozier out. They want him to get under the tunnel because they're afraid for his safety. They're pouring liquid over. What a disgraceful showing from the Pistons fans here.
How can you forget that moment, folks? Again, that was Mike Breen along with Bill Walton on the call. Again, on this day back in 2004, 11 years ago, during a Detroit Pistons and Indiana Pacers game, a fight broke out involving fans and players. Several players were suspended, and all involved were later charged with assault and battery. I remember watching that game live, my jaw being completely on the floor. It was by far the most the heinous fight I've ever seen in sports history. But and again, it would happen in Detroit, right, or in Auburn Hills involving the Pistons, right? But that occurred on this day back in 2004. Riveting stuff. Riveting stuff. Something that I will never forget. All right. Well, those are that's our show. That's our show for today, folks. Again, special thanks to Matt Bird, head coach of the Grand Ledge High School football team, for joining me on the show. Again, Grand Ledge takes on Romeo tomorrow night to keep their state championship dreams alive. Matt was fantastic. And thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.